And welcome back to Dad's on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues, and more. I'm Bill Cable, and as a special treat today, we have for Anzac Day, our guest is Dr. Will Davies. Will spent 37 years working as an independent producer of mainly historical documentaries and series for the ABC and SBS. In a new career, he began writing books, with the first published in 2012, and to date has had 10 books published. Somme Mud, The War Experiences of an Australian Infantryman in France, 1916 to 1919, which he edited, has become a bestseller in Australia, the UK and the Netherlands. Several have featured in previous shows on Dad's on the Air, including The Last 100 Days and The Forgotten. Will was a member of the New South Wales Anzac Council. He now leads battlefield tours to the Western Front. In 2018, he was awarded a PhD from the Australian National University, and among other projects, he's working to build a war memorial school in the French village of Pozières. Will, welcome back to Dad's on the Air.
Thanks, Bill, very much, and lovely to be here.
So, Will, the First World War ended over 100 years ago. Is there anything left on the battlefield, and is there any urgency in getting over to see it?
Well, we must remember that, as you say, it's over 100 years ago, and a lot's happened. But the fact is that the battlefields, particularly in France and in southern Belgium, are still fields of agriculture. So many of them are still the same. They don't have, obviously, the trenches and the chopped up, churned up mud. But many battlefields were not like that. They're actually just simply open fields where the men charged across an open field. And those, if you go there today, like Boulicourt, which is in France, not that far from Pozières and the Bapaume, the field, I guess, would be no different than it was when those Australians charged across it against the impregnable Hindenburg line. So in other places, of course, the fields have been restored, the trenches are filled in, the cratered land is gone, and now they're laser-planed fields of rapeseed or beet or wheat. And it's very hard for people on my battlefield tours to conceive of these as awful places. Mm. Our mind is full of images of the First World War, of, you know, churned up ground, upturned wagons, dead horses, you know, carnage and detritus. And now, of course, none of that's there. And it's gone from being black and white to colour. So it's a real difficult shift in terms of imagination. And you stand in places like the windmill site at Pozières and you look around and look way beyond the German line and way back into their back line. And this was a land of just mud, not a tree, not a blade of grass, but mud. And now, of course, there's villages and church steeples and hedgerows and roads and green grass. And so it's very hard at places. But what just to answer your question, there are a number of places where evidence of the First World War exists. There are some sort of fenced off areas like Hill 60, the famous Hill 60 where the mines were set off. After the war, they just put a fence around it and just sort of left it as it was. And the same for Beaumont Hamel, where the Newfoundlanders were slaughtered. The Canadian government bought the land straight after the war and left it exactly as it was. And the Canadians did another one. They left the land at Vimy. They've got a few hundred acres at Vimy. And, of course, the trees have grown back, but the craters are there and the mine craters are there, and it's all covered in grass and trees, but you get a real sense of what a battlefield was like, yeah.
Yeah, I have a strong feeling that all Australians should go over there and should see the battlefield and just see what Australia means to a country like France.
Well, it's really interesting because Australians are probably the most affected in terms of returning and remembering and considering the sacrifice of any nation. I mean, the British are only, you know, an hour away on the train, a couple of hours, but school kids go. But you don't see the sort of lines of British, they're often called pilgrims, battlefield visitors. But it is important because I don't care how many books you read, you will not understand the First World War until you go and stand there. And it's, you know, you go to places like Pozieres where we had nearly 8,000 casualties, or 23,000 casualties in 6 weeks, of which about 7,000 were dead. And of those 7,000, something like 5,000 have no known grave. They're in the ground around that tiny village, Mouquet Farm and Pozieres. And it's sacred ground. I mean, for a long while, Pozieres was the biggest Australian cemetery in the world, bigger than Rookwood and other places. And it's extraordinary. And it's a very, very emotional journey. And this is what you're on a trip. You're not there to enjoy the food or the shopping. You're there to cry. You're there to understand our sacrifice. And it's very important that, I think, Australians and our young people in particular go and experience these traumatic times, which so formed our nation.
Now, you mentioned that when you go there now, you see all the flat fields, and it looks very different from what you might imagine. But I guess this just emphasises that the advantages of having a guide rather than just going on a self-guided tour.
Well, that's exactly right, Bill. I first went there in about 93. I was affected by the reinterment of the unknown soldier in the War Memorial, and I thought, look, I've got to understand this. So I went and I got a ferry to Calais on the Friday night. I was up early. I was into the Avis office, had a car. I was on the road by 8 o'clock, and I drove around for 2 days. And you go somewhere, and Pozieres is a classic example. I remember going there and thinking, well, okay, I'm here, and there's the 1st Division Memorial, but what am I looking at? And as a historian, I need to know that. And there's no signs telling you, you know, the front line was here or the attack went from there. So I came away feeling quite, you know, disappointed. Having, you know, I could say I'd been there, but I didn't know what I was looking at. And given that they're just green fields and crops and things like that, you really need a guide. You need someone that can point out what you're looking at, where things happened, where trenches were. And trenches for us historians are fairly easy to find or locate because we've got the 1 in 10,000 trench maps of the time, and we can use Google Earth and actually locate those. You know, we can stand on top of what was a trench line. There's a lot of information at hand to make it visual if you've got someone to know who knows that.
Well, you've been leading battlefield tours since about 2010. I expect you know the Western Front very well, certainly the Australian operational areas. Where do you tend to take your tour groups?
Well, I do take them to nearly every single Australian operational area. I begin by going up to Ypres, Ypres was this sort of salient. It was surrounded on three sides by a German line and bombarded relentlessly. It was a terrible place to be. The Australians were there in the fighting along the Menin Road, and then up in Glencoss Wood and Polygon Wood, and then they moved through Zonnebeck and up towards Passchendaele. And of course, the other big area nearby is Messines, and that was the scene of the firing of the 19 mines in June 1917, and that was, if anyone's seen the film Beneath Hill 60, that's what that was all about. So that's another very interesting place. And then I take the group down via a visit to Fromelles and Vimy, the big Canadian memorial at Vimy Ridge, down to the Somme, and we then do the Somme area, and that's sort of broken into the battles of 1916. After the 1st of July 1916, the big British assault known as the Battle of the Somme, the Australians came into that fight on the 24th at Pozieres, and so we spend a bit of time around Pozieres and Mouquet Farm, and then look at the battlefields. As the Germans were pushed back, we follow that advance of the Allies and the Australians, and we go to Goudecourt and then through Bapaume to the outpost villages and then to Bullecourt. And then in March 1918, the Germans were at a point where they had to make a big decision. The Americans were coming. They expected 1 million American troops to land, but they on their side had they had 50 or 60 divisions of men, and a division's about 15,000 men, so by 60 divisions. So they had a lot of men, and they decided they'd have this big push, this big offensive, which became known as the March Offensive, and they just drove the British back relentlessly. And this is where the battles of Dernancourt and particularly Villers-Bretonneux came in. So at that point, the Germans were stopped in April 18, and then in July and August, the Allies then pushed back, and the Great Battle of Amiens and the Battle of Hamel, and that really was the beginning of the end of the war, the 8th of August, Battle of Amiens. So we go to those places where along the Somme, and I actually go to the last battle at Montbrun, where the Australians had their final battle, and they were pulled out of the line on the 6th of October 1918, and the war finished on the 11th of November.
Hearing you mention Ypres, a place in Belgium, it just reminds me, my grandfather called it Wipers.
Yeah, that's right. Wipers was a common name. They made up names. You know, Mouquet Farm was Moukau Farm, and, you know, they had their own names for things. Yeah, Wipers.
And we're speaking today with Dr. Will Davies, who is the author of many books on the First World War and currently doing battlefield tours. We're just taking a walk through those tours today as in commemoration of Anzac Day. Will, at this point of the show, we always ask our guests if they'd like a song for us to play. Have you got one for us?
Look, I always, I think last time we talked about the band played Waltzing Matilda, and there's another one that in the same vein, it's called No Man's Land, and I think that says it all. It's about the, really about the cemetery at Tynecott, which is near Passchendaele, only a mile or so from Passchendaele, and it's the biggest Allied cemetery in the world. It's got over 12,000 Allied graves, which probably only a third of them are known with a name on them. And there's certainly a lot of Australians there. But No Man's Land, I think it's called the Green Fields of France. That'll be a beauty. Thanks, Bill.
Well, how do you do, Private William McBride? Do you mind if I sit here down by your grey side? And I'll rest for a while in the warm summer sun. I've been walking all day long and I'm nearly done. I see by your gravestone you were only 19 when you joined the glorious fallen in 1916. Well, I hope you died quick and I hope you died clean. Or Willie McBride, was it slow and obscene? Did they beat the drum slowly? Did they sound the fife lowly? Did the rifles fire o'er ye as they lowered you down? Did the bugles sing last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flutes of the forest? And did you leave a wife for a sweetheart behind? In some faithful heart is your memory and shine. And though you died back in 1916, to that loyal heart are you always 19? Or are you a stranger without even a name, forever enshrined behind some glass pane in an old photograph torn and tattered and stained and fading to yellow in a brown other frame? Did they beat the drums slowly? Did they sound the fife lowly? Did the rifles fire o'er ye as they lowered you down? Did the bugles sing last post in chorus? Did the pipes play the flutes of the forest? Well, the sun shining now on these green fields of France, the warm wind blows gently and the red poppies dance. The trenches have vanished long under the plough,
no gas and no barbed wire, no guns firing now. But here in this graveyard, it's still no man's land. The countless white crosses in you'd witness stand. To man's blind indifference to his fellow man, and a whole generation who were butchered and damned. Did they beat the drum slowly? Did they sound the fife lonely? Did the rifles fire o'er ye as they lower ye down? Did the bugles sing the last post?
It was No Man's Land, the Greenfields of France, performed by Eric Bogle, and that was a choice of our special guest today, Dr. Will Davies. So, Will, we're just talking about the various areas where you take your tour groups. Are there any no-go areas along the Western Front?
There are some. I don't really encounter any. I know there's a big no-go area down near Verdun, but I haven't been there, so I can't talk about it. But we regularly find hand grenades and, you know, you see ordnance stacked up beside the road, shells from the First and probably the Second World War. Hand grenades, I'd say, are fairly inert. They're all rusted. And knowing, having been in the army, I know how delicate a hand grenade mechanism is. So I don't really fear picking one up and showing people a hand grenade. But there's plenty of shrapnel balls and bits of metal and chunks of shell and things that people always pick up and bring back as a souvenir, you know.
With going to all these battlefields, you've mentioned how emotional it is, and I can certainly testify to that. But what to you is the most moving and profound memorial over there?
It's probably the windmill site above Pozieres. Now, when we talk about above or a high point, we're talking about a bit of a speed bump here. I mean, if you drive out of Pozieres up the hill, it's a gradient of about 5%. But it was the highest point around, and that's where a windmill existed before the First World War. It was quickly destroyed by the British artillery because it was a German observation point. By the time the Australians attacked at Pozieres, it was really just a pile of rubble. But there is, when you go there today, there's a square of grass. It's about the size of a domestic quarter-acre block in Australia, just a grass area with a hedge around it, and the pile of the remains of this sort of mound of the windmill. And set on a stone plinth, there's a statement about how this is the site of the Pozieres windmill and how it fell to the Australian troops on the 4th of August 1916, where, and the quote goes something like, where Australians fell more thickly on this slope than any other slope of the war or any other place or battlefield of the First World War. So you look around and it's this benign, verdant, lovely hill, the carnage and the death and the sadness and the loss and sacrifice in that immediate area is quite profound. And Pozieres is a place that affects me most, yeah.
The cemeteries are really something to behold over there. They're beautifully maintained, and it's always a shock to the system when you see how many graves there are. And perhaps you could tell us how the relatives are affected. And also, of course, there are the headstones where it has that horrible expression, I suppose, known only unto God.
Yeah.
Could you tell us a bit about those cemeteries?
The cemeteries are just amazing, and they're beautiful, and their upkeepers extraordinary. I mean, it's as though someone gets along down there with a pair of nail scissors and trims the edges. How can I put it? The graves are laid out in different ways, and you go to places where there was a casualty clearing station, and the graves are all neat lines. Most of them have a name on them because they've died in a casualty clearing station. They know who the man is, and they laid him down next to the guy yesterday. So it's very neat and clear. Other places in real battlefield areas have got, you know, men were buried and they might have put a cross up with their name on it, but that was subsequently destroyed by shell fire, so the grave's lost. And there's so many graves. I mean, I think on the Villa Bretonneux National Memorial, there are about 10,000 names of Australians with no known grave in the Somme. And then up on in Ypres, you've got the Menin Gate, and there's another 4,500 or something up there of men who have no known grave who died on the Ypres salient. So, you know, out of, that's say 15,000 men out of about 45,000 casualties, that's a pretty high proportion of men with no known grave. But the cemeteries are quite emotional. There's only one in France and one in Belgium that are totally Australian. The one in France is at Fromelles, BC Corner Cemetery, and the one in Belgium is down in Plug Street Wood, Ontario Cemetery. It's got a Canadian name by chance, simply that it was a Canadian area and they'd put their name on it, but it's a fully Australian, only Australians are buried there.
Now, there's a daily service at the Menin Gate, which is, again, an extraordinary experience to go there. And you've got your own ceremony of burning gum leaves. Could you perhaps tell us a bit about the ceremonies?
Yeah, well, I don't burn them at the Menin Gate. The Menin Gate service started in about 1927 and went right through until the Second World War when they continued it in England at a cemetery or at a memorial in England. And then when the Germans were pushed out of the centre of Ypres, and they were still fighting within a couple of kilometres of the Menin Gate in 1944, they resumed the service, and it goes every night, 8 o'clock, rain, hail or shine. Thousands of people go there, and it's great to see school kids, and it's different every night. Sometimes there might be a choir, there might be a special little guard of honour or a ceremony, and it's a very special thing. The second thing is gum leaves burning. I collect gum leaves, and ideally I collect them in the grounds of the Australian War Memorial in Canberra, and I make up some little sort of gum leaf wreaths that I give to people to put on graves. But any we've got left over, we burn them in often at Goudecor Cemetery, where there's a lot of Australians, and it's just sort of reenacting what the diggers went through. They'd get a couple of leaves in their letters. You could imagine they'd huddle in the bottom of a trench and smell eucalyptus. So it was a reenactment of that. It was and it's funny because, you know, Aboriginals have a smoking ceremony, and, you know, I've started this, or we're doing this smoking ceremony in another way, where I let the smoke blow across the graves, and we say the ode, and it's a very emotional time, particularly for people with a member of their family in that cemetery.
Villers-Bretonneux has a special significance for all Australians. The Australian National Memorial is there, and there's also a school, which the Victoria School, with a big sign on it. Could you tell us about that?
Well, what happened was the Villers-Bretonneux was attacked on the 25th of April 1918. So it happened to be on Anzac Day. And the Victorians under Pompey Elliott attacked around one side, and the New South Wales 14th Brigade attacked on the other side, and they nearly joined up to enclose the whole village and capture the Germans in the village. A few got away. After the war, Victoria quickly claimed, put their foot on Villers-Bretonneux and called it their own. And in about 1923 or 1924, somewhere, they'd had this fundraising drive among Victorian school kids, where they were asked to donate a penny. And someone told me they lined up the pennies, and they went for about a mile, these pennies. And so the pennies went, along with Australian government aid, to build a school, which is now known as the Victoria School. And when you go there, you see, you know, drawings of kangaroos on the windows. But there's a massive sign in the playground that just says, it's a yellow sign with black writing that says, "Do not forget Australia." It's massive. I mean, it just dominates the whole playground. This is a thing that's, you know, 10, 15 metres long, a sign that's a metre high and 15 metres long. But you see around that area signs that say the same, "Do not forget Australia," in French and English. And a few years ago now, I was in Amiens and I went into a tobacconist to buy some matches to burn my gum leaves. And the tobacconist, as he started to hand them to me, said, "Where are you from?" And I said, "I'm from Australia." He said, "Well, you take the matches." He said, "If it wasn't for the Australians, we'd be speaking German today." Now, this is 100 years later, you know, and people still remember. And it's amazing. The other thing quickly, Bill, is that people say, "Oh, it's 100 years ago. How do, you know, who cares? Who remembers?" I mean, I regularly have people on my tours that'll point to a name on a memorial like Villers-Bretonneux and say, "That was my uncle." And you say, "Hello, not your great-great-grandfather or your great-great-uncle, but your actual uncle." Mm. And so when you think of it, you know, there's still people alive. The, you know, that soldier might have had a younger sister, and this is the child of that younger sister, and they're obviously in their 70s or 80s. But that connection's still close, and people, you know, remember these men.
Certainly do. Now, Will, I wonder if you could just tell us a bit about your tours that you're doing to the battlefields. So if people are interested in contacting you and perhaps joining the tour, what should they do?
Okay, I do a six-day tour. Usually I do 6 days on the Western Front, and because people say to me, well, I'm not going to Europe for 6 days, what else can we do? So I've been doing a six-day Western Front tour, then we do a four-day Normandy tour, and last year I actually did, I went from Normandy to Jersey, the island of Jersey, because on the 9th of May, 1945, the Germans were driven off. Jersey was liberated. And it's a fascinating place because Jersey, Guernsey and Sark, the Channel Islands, were the most defended parts of the Atlantic Wall. They, Germans believed that they wanted them back. British realised that there'd be carnage if they tried, so they didn't ever try. But all these, the remains of that German occupation are still very visible. Underground hospitals, a lot of bunkers and a lot of fortifications. Then I went from Jersey to London. I did about a six-day wartime London tour, where we went to Imperial War Museum, Bletchley Park, Duxford, which is the RAF Museum, the Greenwich Maritime Museum. So there's a lot, the Churchill War Rooms, there's a lot to see in terms of history there. And then I did Gallipoli on the way home. So it was a long tour. But if anyone's interested, if they just email me at info@willdavies, one word, willdavies.net.au, info@willdavies.net.au, and what I'll do is send them a expression of interest form, and they can get their name and get their details, and then I can keep them in the loop. But I won't be doing any till 2025.
We'll have that information on the website. And look, unfortunately, once again, we've run out of time, but it's been fascinating taking this walk through the battlefields with our expert guest, Dr. Will Davies. Will, it just remains for me to give a special thank you. Thank you very much for being on Dad's on the Air once again.
Thanks, mate, and the best for everyone for Anzac Day. Please turn up to a dawn service and show our respect.
And don't forget, we'll be back next week with another show on Dad's on the Air. And if you'd like to listen to this show or any of our shows, go to our website, www.dadsontheair.com.au, and we'll see you again next week.